Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Tonight, we are starting our preview series where we're previewing all the opponents for the Kansas Jayhawk football team coming up this year. In conjunction with our 100-day countdown to football, we're going to follow the same convention there and actually go in reverse order. So tonight we have for you a preview of the Baylor Bears. And to help me with that, I have from our sister site over at Our Daily Bears, it's Kendall Kaut. How are you doing tonight, Kendall?
Doing well, Andy. Happy to join you to discuss some football.
Yeah, definitely. It's a little weird, especially being a Kansas fan, you know, kind of talking about football at this point, but it is that time of year for everybody. I actually just got done talking with some other people about it as well on a podcast, not our own here. So I'm in a football talking mood at this point. So first question I have for you, obviously being an outsider to the Baylor Bear program, but I think last year probably went for you guys about as well as anybody could expect in terms of Baylor fans. Am I correct in that assessment?
I think it's fair to say that it was a good season. I think 2017 season was kind of a, obviously you can get into the scandal and how much you want to get into that, I can respect. 2017, even with the scandal, I think most people thought that team didn't have any business losing to Liberty. But you make a bowl game after winning one game the year before, and you saw some of the growth in the team. And I think that by most realistic expectations for people who aren't just totally crazy, a 6-6 campaign coming off of a 1-1 season was indeed a good year.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Rhule, kind of outperformed any of the expectations that anyone had for him. Given what the program had coming off of the whole scandal, I don't think there were really a lot of expectations for this team. It was probably going to be at least a couple year rebuild. And he really hit the ground running. Obviously the year before being the only win against our Kansas Jayhawks, we weren't really too happy about that, but kind of showing that it is possible if you have the right guy at coach that you can actually bounce back pretty quickly in this conference. So that being said, jumping from the one win the prior season, to 7 wins this last season with the bowl win that you guys had. What are the expectations for this team?
It's a really fair question, Andy, and it's one that I think a lot of people would be pretty divergent on. I think there are some folks that think that Baylor has a realistic shot at maybe finishing 3rd in the conference if some breaks go their way. Max Olson previewed the Bears recently for The Athletic, and he mentioned there's a pretty wide open perch for what team thinks they're next in line for Texas and Oklahoma that I've feel like most people would respect to the top 2 teams. I think Baylor has an outside chance to finish 3rd, but more realistically, I think Baylor's probably a team again this year. It's probably in that 6-6 range where some breaks really go against them. Maybe they go to 4-8. And if they catch a couple breaks, maybe win a couple close games, they could go 8-4, 9-3. But I probably have them being pretty similar to last year, going 6-6 again.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. The Big 12 is a pretty competitive conference. I think pretty much every team except for probably Kansas, maybe Kansas State, and then of course Oklahoma or Texas, like I think you could pencil all of them in at finishing around 500 in the conference just based how the rest of the conference goes. Like it's completely realistic to see any team being a middle of the road team in this conference just with how strong it is top to bottom. So but I do kind of want to go ahead and take a look at the schedule a little bit here. Before we talk how the team is actually set up, you have 3, I would say, low level opponents to start out the year. You guys start the season at home against Stephen F. Austin, then play UTSA, that is University of Texas San Antonio, if I remember correctly, and then you guys travel on the road to Rice in the 3rd week of the season. The non-conference slate doesn't really seem to be too difficult. It's probably kind of that setup that allows you to kind of get your feet underneath you and see if you can get some good momentum going to the season. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you look at Baylor's non-conference schedule and they'll probably be an 85-95% favorite in all 3 of those games.
Which, of course, doesn't mean anything. You know, given a couple years ago, you're probably in a lot of those had a very, very bad, start to the season there. I believe Liberty was probably the low point of that particular season. Anything can happen in college football in general, but I think everybody would be kind of shocked if they if they lost any of those games, but especially if they lost more than one of them. So, all right, moving on to the Big 12 schedule, you guys get to start at home against Iowa State, and then kind of, I would say, are gifted with a little bit of an easier slate up front, I think. The one against Iowa State at home to start is a little tough, but then you have Kansas State and Texas Tech right after that, and then kind of jump right into the meat of the schedule, going to Oklahoma State, welcoming West Virginia in on Halloween night, actually. And anything about that beginning of the Big 12 schedule that really jumps out to you?
I think what kind of jumps out, as you mentioned, Andy, is that that's a really easy run for Baylor at the beginning of the season, where I would agree, I think K-State's the ninth best team in the league. Texas Tech didn't make a bowl game last season and has a new head coach. And then Iowa State's a good team, but it's sometimes a little bit tougher for me to be objective about the Cyclones just because I live in Kansas City, so I go to the Big 12 tournament every year. And I know there's that, like, chasm that exists between, like, how sometimes the media sees Iowa State fans and how I think the world does. But I just I really can't stand Iowa State. And so that's, like, the game I'd like to win. Like, there's no non-Baylor rival that I have any problem with. Just naturally, I'm going to have some problems with, like, TCU or Texas, but I respect the heck out of them. I can't handle Iowa State.
That's a new thing that their fans can get a little over the top, especially when it comes to basketball. But, you know, I do think also kind of being a Kansas fan who's suffered at the bottom of the conference with them for so long, you kind of had that little bit of friendship. And I was really happy to see them, you know, burst onto years ago and kind of follow that up last year. I do think, though, if, you know, if it's not Baylor that fights for that third spot in the conference and potentially pushing for a Big 12 title game spot, Iowa State, I think, is the next most likely. Matt Campbell, I think, is a really, really good coach, and he seems to have a really good program running up there. So, you know, I do think that's probably the only game early in the slate that will really tell us anything about this Baylor team. And I think we'll do the same for Iowa State. Like, that game will pretty much set up who it is in that second tier of Big 12 teams that we can expect to really be challenging. So, all right, Russ, are you happy to be ending the season with Kansas? Do you think this game is actually going to be these two teams at this point?
I think that everybody would probably – it's a good question about, like, would you rather play KU earlier in the season or later in the season? I'm okay with it being the last game. I think it's a game Baylor should still win. Les Miles year one, obviously that's, I don't think the expectation for him is that he has to turn it around immediately. And I guess, Andy, I haven't seen anything. Do you know if the status of Puka Williams is going to be for the season?
So at this point, they have not said whether he's going to be reinstated. He's gone through the legal process at this point. Last I heard, he was in the diversion process. He has not been officially reinstated to the team, but I believe all expectations that he'll be coming back to the team at some point. Whether that means he gets a suspension for the first few games or something like that, or if get all that discipline in-house and just, you know, do what they need to do there and kind of move on. I'm not really going to be yet. There haven't really been any strong indications. And, of course, doesn't help that this, you know, happened before – well, right after Les Miles got hired. And so it's not like it happened while Miles was here. So that adds an extra layer of uncertainty of how he wants to handle it. You know, cause it wasn't his guy. The incident didn't actually happen while Miles was here. So it's not broken any of Miles' rules. There's obviously still the optics of this kind of in general, you know, of how that whole situation is going to be handled, especially with, you know, kind of the national attention to these sites. But the other thing you got to be realistic about is the fact. So if they let him come back, I doubt it for anybody that is not really following the Big 12. So it really is, you know, completely unknown at this point what that's going to be. But I do think even if Puka doesn't come back, they actually have a really stacked running back squad. That's probably the one area of the team where they could afford to lose a big guy like that, because they have probably 4 to 5 guys that could actually be playing significant time at the running back this year.
Sure. That's fair. Just for me though, it's like Puka was so excellent that even if dropped from I think he's an A-plus running back. It's just by far the best thing that happened in the David Beatty era was getting Puka Williams. I went to law school at KU, so I was behind David Beatty at the 6th Street Chipotle in Lawrence one day, and he orders a burrito bowl at Chipotle, and he doesn't get rice or beans. He gets triple steak, and Pico, and that's it. And at that moment, I was like, this era is not going to work. Fire him now. This Chipotle order, I don't trust this guy. So those are my hot takes on KU football, that Puka Williams, for his trouble off the field, I'm only commenting on his skill, as just an incredible football player on the field, and that I knew the David Beatty era was doomed from Chipotle.
And when did that happen?
I want to say this was
the whole Chipotle.
I want to say this was like 2015.
So this might have been really early. That was a lot of heartache if we had just found a way to get them to realize how poor his Chipotle order was.
Right. It would have been incredible to be like, I know we just hired him. I know we've been talking about trust in the process or whatever, but he's got to go.
Oh, man. And if that had actually happened, you know, like I can imagine all the crazy reasons to fire somebody, that would have put Kansas back in the national headlines again, you know, and that's what they've been trying to do, is get back on the national scene there. So would have been a perfect opportunity there. All right. So I am actually going to go ahead. I want to turn the attention now to the actual team itself. But before we do that, I'm going to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right. So I said before the break, I wanted to kind of focus on this particular team. So I think the natural place to start is, what big pieces from this Baylor team last year do you guys not have any longer?
Sure. So not a ton of – there are three losses on the offensive side, really. Number one is Jalen Hurd. He was a really good wide receiver. He was Tennessee's running back for 3 years and decided to transfer and played wide receiver at Baylor and was a third-round draft pick this past spring. So he's a giant loss, but Baylor returns every other receiver they had, including Denzel Mims, who's a pretty big star. And the other two losses for Baylor are their right tackle and right guard, and Patrick Lawrence and Blake Blackmar. So for a Baylor offensive line that really struggled at times last season, especially against quality teams like West Virginia, you lose two guys off that offensive line, you sometimes start to get into struggle territory.
Yeah. I mean, having dealt through all of the offensive line troubles that Kansas had, that could be both a blessing and a curse. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work because the chemistry's not there. But I'm guessing the way you've been talking about them, it sounds like they're probably – it wasn't like they were kind of the worst performers. They were probably some of the best linemen you guys had experience. But it'll be interesting to see how they can kind of fill those pieces. I do think, honestly, that the talent level at an offensive line is probably only about even as important as the chemistry that offensive line has. So that's – you know, if that's where your biggest losses are, it's probably it could be a whole lot worse.
Right. And so I agree with you entirely there. That's kind of the Baylor 2016 team, which was the year that Art Briles gets fired and all the assistants stay on. There's like the two narratives you can have about, did the team kind of fall apart because of the scandal, and that the coaching staff that stayed around might have even been subverting the team in a way. And there was also the theory, though, that just they lost four of the five offensive linemen they had, and the guys couldn't block when they started playing the best teams in the league. I think it's probably a little bit of both. Normally I wouldn't go full conspiracy theorist, but I do think some of the assistant coaches that stayed around after the firing were not real happy with Baylor because those dudes loved Art Briles. And so you had kind of a little bit of both working for them. But there was at least a major part that was, you got to have an offensive line. And for all the greatness that is Lincoln Riley as a coach and an offensive coordinator, certainly to me a top five coach in the sport, he's had consistent 30, 40 game starters, those offensive positions the last 2 years he's made the playoff. And so if you're Baylor and you already had a bad offensive line, the gap from terrible to just bad is sometimes greater than the gap from good to great, as I think KU football's demonstrated, you know, kind of consistently the last decade, yeah. And as Baylor football demonstrated consistently the decade before.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Kansas has at best gone from bad and then at worst absolutely atrocious. So, there's a big gulf there, you know, where, you know, beating Texas in a year, being the highlight of your year, really just upgraded us from bad or from terrible to bad, which gave people a lot of hope there. And we realized just how bad it really was still at that point the following year. So I understand that completely. So for those of us, though, that aren't as familiar with this Baylor team, as the Bear fan, who are the main contributors for this team on offense? And who are you expecting to kind of be the main playmakers going into the year?
Sure. So Charlie Brewer is back at quarterback. He's the junior starter. He started most of the final stretch of games his freshman season. then started about every game when he was healthy last season, though they did a split quarterback thing at the beginning of the year. Charlie Brewer's a really solid quarterback. The only question with him, it maybe getting to that elite level, is his arm strength. He's the highest rated returning quarterback in the Big 12, and there's a pretty big gap between him and the next players on that list. I think Jalen Hurts at Alabama, from Alabama to Oklahoma, is going to be the best quarterback in the league, but I think there's a good case that Charlie Brewer is better than Sam Ellinger. So it's between, I think, those two for second and third in the league. Denzel Mims was an excellent wide receiver. Tristan Ebner and Jamichael Hasty are good running backs. Hasty's been the starter off and on for four seasons. And then Chris Platt is a sixth-year player who got another year of eligibility because of some injuries he had in the past. Tyquan Thornton was really good. There's some other wide receivers that were four-star kids from Texas. One guy ran the 100 in like 10-1 in high school. So a lot of skilled playmakers there. Just really the question on offense is that offensive line. And then if the quarterback position gets to Gary Bohannon, who was a four-star quarterback out of Arkansas, how consistent is a redshirt freshman going to be going from a very low A school? I think they use the A schools, is my understanding of Arkansas football. But how does he do if he has to step in and play quarterback? So there are some scenarios where Baylor could be that 9-win team if everybody stays healthy. But there are also those scenarios where the gap between Baylor being that 9-win team they could be and becoming a 3 or 4 win team certainly exists, where, look, I don't care who, you know, gets hurt at Oklahoma, they're going to win 7 games in their absolute worst scenario. But Baylor has a bottom that is much lower than that.
Yeah, I mean, if the bottom completely just falls out on them, you know, I could see it getting pretty bad. And then end of the year, and like if it's completely gone to crap at that point and Kansas is having a year, you know, that they're hoping that they could have, I could see this game potentially being competitive.
Right. And I think that's very realistic.
But go ahead.
Sure. I think that's totally realistic, Andy, because the way to think about this, obviously, is even if Baylor's a 90% favorite in that game, which I think they probably will be, y'all have beaten TCU last season. You beat Texas. And the absolute dumpster fire of an era that was Charlie Strong, y'all beat West Virginia. And so it's like those 10% events happen all the time. And, you know, James Holzhauer just lost on Jeopardy. And so when 10% events happen, they happen to somebody. And Baylor's won, I think, 10 or 11 straight against Kansas. They're going to lose again to KU. And in a year where I think Baylor and football, kind of my two hot takes are, I think Baylor basketball is, even though they're ranked top 15 in a lot of polls, is going to be very underrated still entering the season. I think Baylor football, for a lot of these people that think they'll finish third or fourth, is probably overrated.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I've seen the projections and predictions coming all over the place. You know, there's, I believe it was Heartland College Sports is kind of the local Kansas City area, kind of Big 12 news outlet there. They have a radio show. They talked about Baylor potentially, you know, being a team that makes it to the Big 12 title game this year. But I also have seen some people, you know, kind of say that, look, you know, Matt Rhule had a great second year, but to be honest, that was a big jump from where everyone thought they were going to be, and they could see some regression there. And I do think that the thing that is cited the most often is their offensive line play. So, I mean, everything you said to this point makes complete sense to me. You know, I could honestly see them going anywhere from 9 wins to only 3 wins, just really depending on how the season turns out for them. So shifting focus now, what about on the defense? Who are the big playmakers there? Who are we expecting to kind of see terrorizing the opposing offenses this year?
Sure. So James Lynch will play both defensive tackle and defensive end. He's kind of Baylor's star on the defensive line, has started every game healthy since his freshman season. He's now a junior, and I think he's a pretty good candidate to be an early entry guy. Blake Lynch had played about every position for Baylor. He started at running back, wide receiver, safety, nickelback, and now plays linebacker. And so he's a guy, because of the speed he has and his strength, that I think they feel pretty confident gives him at least one quality linebacker. And they have a series of corners they've tried to mix and match. The two problems for Baylor have been their linebackers right now just do not have Big 12 speed. And for how Matt Rhule's recruiting philosophy really is just, I coached in the NFL, I was a player, if I just get fast and strong guys in the program, we'll make them football players. Well, they haven't gotten speed at linebacker, so that's going to be a huge issue in the Big 12. I mean, Oklahoma beat a lot of teams down last season with Kyler Murray, but Baylor just had no hope. Even when they'd call the perfect defensive alignment, their linebackers were just too slow. And so if the linebacker core is even slower this year than it might be, that's a problem. And then you look at the secondary, they just couldn't stop anybody at safety a lot of times last season. Didn't matter if they were in Tampa 2, cover 2, it just didn't matter. And so kind of speed at safety and coverage at safety and then linebacker speed are the two things that keep me up at night about Baylor football. But I don't expect Baylor to contend for a national title, so I'm not really staying awake at night wondering about, you know, the breaks they need to catch in much the same way that I am probably going to be staying awake in February thinking about how Baylor could win a basketball game I'd like them to win. I think that speed at linebacker and then the safety position are two things that are big question marks, but they've got some really good defensive line play, and that might help them make up for the problems they have there.
Yeah, definitely. And I am not going to take the bait and try to pivot the conversation to basketball as much as I really are going to keep this strictly to football at this point. But so final thing that I have for you in terms of this particular team, obviously, you know, you said they didn't really lose a lot in terms of graduating seniors that were expected to contribute. But which of the recruiting class do you think is the guy that's going to come in and make an immediate impact on this team?
Right, that's fair. I don't really think there's a true freshman that's going to be a star for Baylor this year. I think it's going to be more that guys that were kind of in middle roles become in larger roles. So a guy like Giancarlo Valentin was a junior college guy that wasn't quite up to speed last year. Or there are some other guys in the offensive line that maybe didn't play as much last season. So I think that's more what you're looking at. Tristan Ebner wasn't the full-time offensive lineman. You look at Jake Frumorgan, who was a Clemson starter on their national championship team, not last year, but the one before that. I think he's a guy who's going to play a lot more this season. Maybe he'll play center. Maybe he'll play a tackle spot. So I think it's more the guys that were a recruiting class or two back that will play this year. But I think Baylor's in a spot where they're not going to play very many true freshmen or junior college guys this year. So it's not really a team I think you look at and say, hey, watch out for this freshman. If I were a fan of any other team, there's not a Baylor freshman that sticks out. Now, maybe I'll be wrong and somebody will step up immediately, but they don't really have that five-star kid that's going to come in and just dominate.
Yeah, I completely understand that. Okay, so final question for you, and then we'll go ahead and get out of here for the night. Which game on Baylor's schedule do you think is going to be the most important in terms of defining what this season is for them?
So I think, too, we had talked about Iowa State earlier. I think that's my number one pick. But then the second one I would probably look at would be that game at Oklahoma State. And so I guess there are kind of two schools. One is if Baylor's a team that wants to finish third in the Big 12, you need to at least win one of those games. And you figure that 8-4 could probably get you third in the Big 12. But if you want to kind of contend for it, you probably need to win both. And the other one I would look, and so you look at those two, and then you maybe look at get the game at West Virginia or against West Virginia. So last year, Baylor just got smoked in Morgantown. Dana Holgorsen leaves. West Virginia's lost a lot of guys from last season. So those are kind of the three that stick out to me. If you're a KU fan, obviously KU-Baylor is a game that maybe you're looking at as a win since it's the last one of the season. If Baylor has a disappointing year, you look at that one. I know Baylor fans will probably focus on the game against Texas. It's at home. Baylor played Texas close last season. And if you look at the advanced metrics for Texas, at least, a lot of those thought that Texas was a 7 or 8 win team last season, and Texas lost just about everybody on defense. So, I mean, I'm halfway into talking myself into I've overrated Texas. They're not back. Don't buy the hype. You beat a sorry Georgia team that didn't want to be in the Sugar Bowl after Bevo tried to kill people and you were inspired. Maybe that's not real. But I think that Baylor probably needs to look at those games more. And I think they're still a year away from wanting to contend with OU or Texas as Big 12 championship level contenders. And then a year or two more from there, if things go right, of trying to contend to get into the playoff. But I think that's still a long way off because at Baylor, we don't really know how long the Matt Rhule era will last since he's flirted with NFL jobs the last few years. And in fairness, if you're flirting for very long, somebody's flirting back with you. So I can totally understand wanting an NFL job, but I don't know how long he is for Baylor.
Yeah, that's kind of the big question out there. You keep hearing that, you know, it bodes well for Baylor when you have a coach that is that, you know, I guess that interesting to NFL teams. But then again, it also probably is not fun to be, you know, the team that is afraid of losing a coach that seems to be getting them back on the right track to an NFL team and then having to potentially start over again. We saw how well that worked for Kansas, having to, you know, change coaches more often than they really wanted to. You know, even if it's for a good reason for him performing well, you still don't really like to have to start over again. The one thing that you said that I found kind of funny, because I get the feeling that when I have a Texas guy on here in about a month and a half, I'm going to end up discussing this quite a bit with him. I happen to agree with your analysis there that Texas is probably a little bit overrated. Sam Ehlinger as you know, the second best quarterback in the Big 12, I don't even think that that's real. I think that Ehlinger is completely overrated as a quarterback. And I think a big part of him being so good last year in terms of the Big 12 was more just the fact that the Big 12 didn't really have a lot of standout quarterbacks last year. So, you know, I think he slots in as the number two right now, kind of just by default, because there isn't really a lot of great guys returning. So we'll kind of see how all of that shakes out, but I would not be surprised to see Ehlinger kind of be, you know, fifth or sixth best in the conference this year, and Texas falling back and pulling a drop kind of the way they did in baseball this year as well. The fact that Texas was a team that went to the College World Series last year in 2018 and didn't even qualify for the Big 12 tournament this year. I'm not going to go out and predict it, but I would just say I would not be completely surprised to find out that they fall really far in the Big 12 standings, kind of unexpectedly, just because people are kind of buying them a little bit too much. So, should be an interesting game, I think, for you guys at that point, right before the KU game. But a lot of how interesting that game is depends on how Baylor has done throughout the year. So, all right. Any other final thoughts you want to leave us about this team?
I think that's it for my Baylor takes. I respect that you don't want to talk KU basketball, but I was like, I do probably have like 3 KU basketball takes. But I respect if you are like, no, we're not going to talk any basketball.
That's fine. I won't get too big into the discussion, but I am always kind of interested in what other people think about our KU team. So go right ahead.
Addition by subtraction, losing Quentin Grimes. I know that like KU fans were probably more disappointed maybe in Josh Selby. And I think Xavier Henry, retrospectively, just because of how the tournament ended, gets viewed a little bit more negatively than I thought he was. But I got tired of kind of the narrative that was emerging at the end of last season that like Quentin Grimes could actually be good. He's just not good at basketball. He's like a guy
I just don't think he fits into the kind of system that KU wants to run. And so for him to show any of that potential, he's going to have to find a system that works for the way he likes to play. And that's
it is fair, but it's like, you know, Devontae Graham or Frank Mason could play on or off the ball. I think Devon Dotson could play on or off the ball. It just says something to me that you're a guy who's billed as a shooter and you're getting wide open looks from Devon Dotson and you can't knock him down.
I mean, I'm not saying that he lives anywhere up to the hype that he had coming out of high school. But I also don't think he's, you know, completely incapable of playing at a high level. It's going to require a system more suited to his needs than Kansas can give them.
No, that's very fair. It's a fair take. I am all out on Quentin Grimes. I think that was a true blessing. But as all out as I am on Quentin Grimes, I'm all in on Devon Dotson. I think it was absolutely ridiculous that an NBA team would not select him in the first round. I just have no clue how Cam Reddish is viewed as a top 5 pick by some folks. It's like everybody watched Duke play basketball. You're playing with the transformational talent in Zion Williamson. And so I just am kind of shocked that Devon Dotson was not given a first round grade or that no one wanted to select him. I think he's going to be an absolute superstar next season. He was great this year. That's just an unbelievable gain for Kansas. They were able to convince him to come back to school. Clearly he got that second round grade. But I don't think that's too much of a hot take to say that he's a great player, but I think he'll be an All-American for KU next season.
In terms of him not getting that first round, you know, promise or grade or anything like that, I just more the fact he was not a highly heralded guy into college. And yeah, he played well overall, but it was really kind of he heated up towards the end of the year quite a bit to kind of bring his overall averages up. I don't blame NBA teams, especially with how small he is, wanting him to kind of show it for a little bit longer before they'll commit to a first round pick for him. But I do think, you know, it's crazy to think that, you know, probably has the two top guys in terms of Big 12 player of the year preseason wise in Devon Dotson and Udoka Azubuike. And both of those guys are probably on the short list for next year as well.
Right. Yeah. If I were voting for that award, I think Devon Dotson and Tristan Clark, I think that I guess kind of my concern with Doak for that award is that he's missed large parts now of 2 seasons, almost all of 1 season. Almost all of 2 seasons he's missed now. for why I would give Devon Dotson the edge if I were voting for that award. And I think Tristan Clark has a case for it. But since he had missed almost all of last season, I think that I'd give it to Devon Dotson entering the year.
That's fair.
And then I guess kind of my final take is that the season will go as far as Ochai takes them. When he was just incredible for those first few games after KU pulled the red shirt, it seemed like they were going to go back to winning the Big 12. And really the only worry I think you have with KU next season is how well do you all shoot it with Marcus Garrett, D'Souza, Doak, and David McCormick as four guys that are going to play a lot of those spots, and then Mitch Lightfoot getting a few minutes. So if he's as good as he was for a stretch, he doesn't have to be quite as dominant as he was in those first couple of games. But if he plays close to how he did then, I think KU is a team that's going to enter again as a one seed. And if he doesn't play up to it, I think they're probably maybe not going to win the Big 12 again. So I think he's really the key player for KU this season. I think you kind of know what you're getting from Marcus Garrett. I think maybe you can make the case that Silvio's the key guy for them, but I think it's all about Ochai because I'm just convinced that Dotson's going to be an All-American. And so that really for me is where the season goes. Is that kind of what you think, or do you think that there's a little more nuance to it?
I mean, I think that there's quite a bit more going on there just because you've got a lot of guys that haven't played in a while. Silvio D'Souza coming back is kind of a could potentially be a spark plug. There's going to be a lot of questions about how they get all the guys they have in the front court onto the court for a decent amount of time. And, you know, it's still kind of floating out there. There's still a couple shooters that are looking to potentially reclassify. You know, there's a brand new grad transfer out there. I forgot the name. It's you know, that just put his name in the portal and is already getting recruited by a ton of different schools. You know, he's a huge shooter that they could potentially get that could kind of help with that. Like, really the only thing that Kansas is missing at this point to be a, like, you know, clear-cut national title contender is consistent three-point shooting. And so, Ochai, you know, if Marcus Garrett can develop a shot to, you know, not be a complete black hole on offense, if he shore up his shot, or if they can get, you know, if they can get one of these guys that's supposed to be a shooter, Jalen Wilson's also a guy who's supposed to be a decent shooter that, you know, was on campus this last week, could potentially be committing to this team. You know, they still have a couple scholarships open, so they can still add a couple guys up that one problem. But if it in-house, I do agree. I think Ochai Agbaji is probably the most likely guy to get hot enough from three. You know, there was a lot of speculation that he came out to a hot start, partly because people just didn't know what to do with him. And then he hit a wall really quickly because, you know, he was dealing with an injury in the preseason, which is why they were initially going to redshirt him. And, you know, he finally just kind of in all the conditioning and stuff was having those kind of problems. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen with a full off season to get all that conditioning back up to shape and kind of really work himself in the rotation. But yeah, it can actually happen there. And it's really just kind of depends on how well Self is able to mesh it all together and how long it takes them to find, you know, a lineup and a rotation that will actually work. All right. So before we get too much further into the weeds, and just turn this into a basketball podcast instead of football, I think we'll go ahead and leave it. Kendall, thank you so much. We will have to have you back on during the football season. And, you know, I hadn't realized you were actually up in the KC area. So, yeah, you get to see a lot of good basketball all the time, which is really nice for you, I'm assuming. And so we'll have to try to have you on during the basketball season as well so we can get all of that preview some what should be some pretty good games in the Big 12 between KU and Baylor as well. So.
That would be excellent. I really enjoyed being on here, Andy, given a few hot takes, maybe too hot. When I look back on it, I'll be like, man, that take was a little too hot, but that's the point in podcasts, and it was a pleasure to be on with you, Andy.
Yeah, the only one that I'll say is not too hot is any hot take we have talking about Texas. You can never have a take too hot against it about Texas. So
that is very fair.
All right, so we'll go ahead and leave it there. For you guys that are listening, thank you for tuning into this podcast. If you have not already, please do go ahead and find us out wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all those great places. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can subscribe to the channel there, and you'll get this immediately when it comes out every single time that it does. So 5 stars, nice comments, all that fun stuff. It really does help to get the podcast out there so that more people can find us and can contribute to how we put together. So, but I will go ahead and leave it there. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.